You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Hi, folks. If you just joined me and you're a big Joel McHale fan, you don't know who the hell I am, which is very possible. I appreciate you being here. I appreciate you giving me the chance. And hopefully after this episode, you'll listen to more of my episodes. That's what you hope. I really think this is a great episode with Joel McHale. I'm not tooting my own horn, but it was one of my favorites. I felt incredibly comfortable talking to him. And he was open about just about to everything I asked him. What do you say, Ryan?
Yeah, I would say he's very comfortable.
Very comfortable. He sent me some gin. He sent me like this gin that I guess, I don't know if they give him money or whatever, but a bottle of gin and glasses and stuff like that. It was really
nice. I meant that he laid on the couch.
He laid on the couch, so you had to sit down because he's a very tall, muscular man.
He's a tall man.
He is. He's in great shape. He looked great. I wasn't shocked. I was more shocked at how bad I looked next to him, I believe.
Yeah, well, he's still hosting television. You got to look a certain way.
Yeah, what are you saying? I have to shave?
I'm saying he has to be more prepared for stuff.
Yeah. Are you saying that I have to get back in shape to do that stuff?
I'm saying you look great the way you are.
I don't know if I believe that. Mm-hmm. Now I'm in my head for the rest of the episode. Way to go. hey, guys, if you really like the show, please subscribe, write a review. If you watch on YouTube, you can write a review. You could also write a review on Apple. Ryan, tell them where they could subscribe.
Follow the podcast on Twitter at Inside of You Pod on Twitter, at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, youtube.com/Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
That's correct. A big thanks to my producing partner there, Bryce, my engineer and editor, Ryan. Fantastic work. Guys, I'm going to be at the end of the show. Listen for it. But I'll tell you where I'm going to be. I'm doing some conventions. They're going to be a lot of fun. And also where to Zoom me if you want to Zoom me at sunspin.com and a bunch of other things after the podcast. But let's just get into this one. This is, again, one of my favorites. And we talk about everything. We talk about working with Chevy Chase and how, after Chevy's departure, how that affected him and just life in general. Let's get inside of Joel McHale.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
You're like the Henry Winkler of younger actors because you're likable. Like everybody, I've never heard one bad thing. Oh, Joel McHale. I love Joel McHale.
Oh,
I love Joel McHale.
It's nice of you to call me young.
Are you not young?
No, I'm going to be 50 this year.
I'll be 49 this year.
Welcome to our world.
Well, doesn't that mean we have, my brother always says you're 49. So you're, well, when I turned 40, he's like, you know, you're closer to 80 than zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't like that. So now I'm 40. I'll be 49. So, I mean, what's the average life expectancy?
What does your producer say? I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's 271.
Just in case you want to talk through your penis, I just aimed the mic at your penis.
Yeah, that was weird. What is the penis going to say?
Do you know, what would the penis
I don't know. What's the average?
Penis size?
Yeah, about 80.
Life size?
85.
85. I would say it's probably late 70s, isn't it? No, maybe it's 80. Is it 80s?
Yeah, I think it's close to 80 now. I think it went down with COVID, yeah. And now it's popping back up again.
Yeah. Do you remember where we met?
The first time?
Mm-hmm.
No. I mean, I know where we saw each other, but was that where we met?
I thought we met, maybe. I don't know. I remember we were testing for the community.
Yes.
And it was a network test. It was just me and you. It was just the two of us.
Yeah.
And my agent kept saying, well, it's just between you and this guy, Joel McHale.
Yeah.
And I remember going in, but I remember talking to you and my brother picked me up from the audition and I said, he goes, how'd you do? I go, I did great. He goes, what do you think? I go, no way. He goes, what do you mean? I go, this guy walked in there and he was just charming as fuck. He was handsome. He just seemed smarter than me. I'm telling you, I think he got the role. I swear to God. And then you got the role. I remember going, I don't even want the role now because this is his role.
Wow. That is, so my experience was, oh, I didn't get that.
That's how you felt.
Yeah. I was like the handsomer, smarter, more charming guy went in.
No.
And I swear to you. And then after I went in, the network was like, we're on the fence. And then they put me on camera to record the scene because I think I was nervous. And then I recorded the scene. They showed the network the camera scene. They went, okay.
Were you nervous that second time? It's like, it gets worse and worse, doesn't it?
What the fuck? At that point, I think I had gone over the material so much that I think I could have done it.
For anyone.
Like on 5-oxy suspended over a bridge. So, but I remember going like, oh, I have literally, by the way, I've never, ever said this, that this thing out loud. I've never like talked about like how we were up for the role.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I had neither. I remember talking about it to some people, but, it was just one of those roles I remember, and I'm not being, you know, nice and like humble about it. I just remember saying he's going to get the role. I know he's going to get the role. It just seemed, if you, and you watch the show, it just fits. I'm more kind of like, you're dry, wry. You know, you have that certain personality that you just kind of that leading man that all the stuff comes at you and you just bounce it off in a funny way. I think we're just a little different. I might be too much and you're just, it's like porridge.
Oh, I don't think you're too much. I don't, what? No.
I'm not putting myself down completely. My listeners hate when I do that.
Really?
Well, yeah, but I mean it. And I don't try to think, you know, I said something about being smart and they're like, well, stop saying you're not smart. I'm like, I didn't say I'm not smart. I just, I don't know.
It's better to say you're not smart and then go, I know exactly what I'm talking about. Right?
I 100% agree with you. Because you become a dick very fast. Right.
I think it's very good to approach things going, I don't know everything about this. And so I'm going to approach it as I don't know anything about this. And so, yeah, that's why I remember seeing Akira Kurosawa, thank you, get his Lifetime Achievement Oscar. And he was like, man, I have so much to learn from these young directors.
Wow. Who,
and I was like, that seems right. As opposed to the dickholes that are like, well, I know how it all works. I can see the entire thing, folks.
It's okay to think you're good at something, but it's how you sort of present it to the world. Like, there has to be some kind of, you can't just say, yeah, I'm fucking great. I deserve this Oscar. I'm awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. I deserve this. And you guys did the right thing for once. Thank you. Good night.
Yes. And it happens every once in a while where someone does get an Oscar and then they give a speech where you go, well, that wasn't real grateful. That just seemed like they expected it and they agreed.
Yeah.
And even if you think that, you should be like, wow, the group of people I'm up against is bananas and I cannot believe I'm standing up here.
Yeah.
Instead of like, yeah, first one. Or yeah, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you a story. I was here's a double name drop for you. I have a game I play when
Steve Martin, go ahead.
Well, I've worked with him.
As have I. Thank you.
I know you have. But when I name drop, I drop something. So I was at Carrie Fisher's house.
Oh, good one.
Drop. And Sharon Stone was there. Dropped another pen.
Okay.
And I ended up talking with Sharon Stone and someone else that wasn't as big as Sharon Stone. And she, because why name them? Sharon Stone.
That's a big list of people who is not as big as well known as Sharon Stone, no matter what.
Yeah. But Sharon's, so it was really bizarre, but she kept, I'm not putting down, I think she's a terrific actress. She's very bright. But she kept, I swear to God, may I die if I'm lying. This is not just hearsay. This is one-on-one. She talked about her IQ and how off the charts brilliant she was.
Oh.
And I remember going, God, if I said that, well, first I could never say that. But she kept going on about it. And then other people were hearing this and we were just kind of like, oh. She's like, yes, my colleagues or whatever say that you're absolutely brilliant off the charts with your IQ. And
that,
it was.
That is, I'm speechless. And I would say the one time her IQ was off the charts was in Goodfellas, because that performance was a masterpiece.
Oh, it was a masterpiece.
That said, did you read the thing that she put in her book that she went in to for surgery for to have minor benign growths removed? And the surgeon decided while she was under to go ahead and give her breast implants. That is a real story that she really told. And I look it up, go right ahead.
It's in her book that she was getting some cysts removed that were benign.
Right.
And the doctor thought, you know what? Sharon deserves better.
Or there was just some, you know, implants lying there. And he was like, you know what? Wow, we're here. I know I didn't ask her. And why am I enlarging breasts here in this clearly probably like a cancer center that removes tumors or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to stick these in because they're here and they go bad. I don't know. And then
there was a
thing she said about Basic Instinct, which was she, and this story is now pretty old because it was in Rosie O'Donnell's stand-up act, but it was a story that she told that she was unaware of the shot in Basic Instinct where she unfold, you know, where she uncurls her legs and folds them back over. She thought that was, they were just doing a test shot. It was such a bizarre, she was like, what? I was unaware they were doing that. And then of course, Rosie O'Donnell in her brilliant stand-up said like, you have to light the pussy. And it was like, you have to get a range for focus on the pussy. She kept saying that. It was such a funny routine.
Yeah, what was it? What was it? Like all of a sudden the director goes, hey, so you did this thing. What did I do? You crossed your legs one over the other and back and forth. And it was just like your legs were spread and we could see sort of like, you know, that. So we were thinking about using that. What?
Right. No. Right.
That's impossible.
And she's like, listen, as you know, in rehearsals with short skirts, I never wear underwear. But when we shoot, I put the underwear on. That's how it works. It was such a weird thing to like those stories are like of all the just say, look, I did that. I wasn't comfortable, but I said, go ahead and do it. And you have basic. No one was asking her. Don't. And then you get like,
there's a disconnect.
Yeah.
There's something.
So did you ask her about quantum physics or something? So you're like, well, no, let's talk about rocket trajectory if you want to get down to it.
Funny you said I'm a Harvard grad. I have a law degree and I'd love to get into this with you.
Yeah. When you look at someone like, what's his name? Jeannie Buss's dad.
Jerry,
who was literally a rocket scientist.
A doctor. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Doctor
literally
science.
Designed parts for a rocket and then decided, you know, it's a smart move. Buying an NBA basketball team. That's
smart.
That's super smart. And at no point have you heard that guy, Scuggy, like, just want to let you know, I'm like, off the charts smart. And no one was questioning it. It's really weird.
Do you know what happened later that night? And I'll get off the Sharon Stone thing.
Somebody scored with one of the top 50 bachelors, according to People Magazine.
Folks, he's looking at top 50 bachelors from, I think, 2004. And it was me, top 50 bachelors of People. And he's, it's a jab.
That's not a jab. That's a ribbing. And a ribbing? And a compliment when you think about it.
Acknowledgement.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Look.
Were you ever the top 50 people?
Well, my wife would have been seriously pissed if I was one of the top 50 bachelors.
yes, she would have.
What the hell? We're married. I have been in the Sexiest Man Alive issues a couple of times.
Wow.
But I think that's what proved that I wasn't.
I don't think that's true.
Because the photos weren't.
You were embarrassed?
Yeah, it was all just below the waist stuff.
What?
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I was kind of like,
how does that work?
I was like, I think there's better photos. That's how I always look at it. It's like when, yeah, it's, I always start going, well, you know what? I could have done better in that photo. Weirdo.
I could have done better in that photo. Maybe the photographer could have chosen better.
It's like I'm blaming the accompanist when I'm trying to do a singing audition. And we're like, if you did it right, then I would have been great.
You know, you say that you couldn't take good pictures, but I look at your physique. And I know Dax talked about this.
This isn't a picture. This is just you.
And I like you being comfortable. And
it
you
is.
Know, Ryan has to resort to sitting on a stool.
But I didn't know the setup, so now I'm
No,
mad.
You're a tall guy. You need to relax. You
Thank
need to
you.
Lounge. How tall are you?
Thank you for asking. I'm 7'1".
You were a liar.
6'4".
6'4".
Yes.
How long have you been 6'4"?
Since I was a senior in high school.
You just bloomed.
Yeah, my dad entered high school and he boxed in below 100 pounds when he entered high school. And when he got out of high school, he was 6'1". He was a tiny person.
That's what I was.
Oh, well, there you go.
I was 5'2", I think, as a freshman. I graduated 5'4", and then my year in between college and high school, I jumped up to 6 feet.
Wow.
That's why I have back problems. But that's probably why.
What part of your back?
Lower back.
No, I can fix that.
I don't think you can. I've had 7 spine surgeries.
Well, you're right. I can't. I was going to say, if it's just always been a chronic thing, then I can give you a number of exercises. Because I had terrible lower back problems.
Okay. Well, I still want these exercises because maybe it will help.
All right. So I would always blow my back out, my lower back. And I just have to lie down for like 2 days. And I was like, I'm an old man. This is now 20 years ago.
Right.
And then I had kids who you have to pick up all the time. And my back was going out. And then I did a movie in 2013. Thank you. Deliver Us From Evil. Thanks a lot for remembering, guys.
I do remember that.
Thank you.
I'm a horror fan.
Oh, God bless. Yeah. And then my back was spasming. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do all this action stuff. And then this tiny little trainer named Allie Gritz on the west side said, I'm going to fix your back in about 2 weeks. And I was like, okay. Then it was deadlifts. I started with barely even the bar and I couldn't hardly do it. And she's like, we're doing it every day. And then in about 4 days, like 5 days, I was like, I'm a young man again. I was like,
are you serious?
It's back. And now I have always had them in my routine and I worked up to like, now I can do tons of weight. And I, whenever I do it, I'm like, all right, it's this part of your body that people always ignore. Because people are like, lift with your legs, be careful. And then all of a sudden you treat the lower back as a china shop and you don't ever use those muscles. And you should, if you isolate the muscles and do it safely, it's a new lease on life.
So deadlifts, that's when you kind of like, you have the bar, when you kind of bend your knees, you pick it up.
You barely bend your knees.
You know, can you show me? I have a weight afterwards, maybe
really
quickly.
Absolutely.
Or you could send me a video, whatever you want.
Seven surgeries,
yeah. Fusions.
Did you have an accident?
I played hockey and sports my whole life.
Well,
that'll
do it.
Yeah, but you know how it's embarrassing because I think it happened in a grocery store. I was working at a grocery store and we used to throw boxes off the truck in the morning.
Yeah.
And I remember them throwing a big box of hard canned peas. Hard canned peas?
Just
a can of peas.
Yeah.
Boxes. And I remember go, whoa, that's weird.
You caught it or you?
I caught it, but something shifted in my back.
Well, that's probably all, but it's not the grocery store. It was a culmination of the things that led up to you catching that at the grocery store.
Hockey, so, grocery store,
yeah,
stress, so it wasn't dysfunction, like, all yeah. these things just added up.
And then there was the moment where you caught the very heavy canned pea box.
Yeah. Pass the peas if you won't.
What year was that?
That was 19.
Or how old were you?
It was 1989.
Okay.
And so I had my first surgery when I was 18.
Wow.
Yeah. So I've had all those since.
And they said it was a slip disc, a bulge disc?
Bulging disc. I had pain shooting down my leg. Shooting. The doctor says he needs immediate surgery. He's going to lose feeling in his leg. And so I ended up having the surgery.
Wow.
So, yeah. I don't have that kind of pain anymore, but it just overt stiffness.
I was doing clean and jerks when I played football. Thank you.
Yeah. This guy was a
not a good football player.
Well, you are a walk-on.
Yes.
Yeah,
so which
which
puts you in a category of cannon fodder. So you are used to make the starters better.
So abused.
In the most sort of like, yes, I would love to get out there and be abused by these Division I All-American athletes because I want to. Yeah.
So right.
It was fun as hell. I loved it.
Yeah.
But they made us do clean and jerks and I pulled all the muscles in my lower back and pain shooting down all that stuff. Couldn't move, couldn't drive. And the weight coach was just like, come back in 3 days. Don't move. And then it got better. And so,
wow. So far, two people who've told you to do something, you listened and it worked.
And it worked.
Usually it's like, oh, I know this guy. He'll fix you. Yeah. None of them work.
Yeah. But again, it's not a safe sport.
How big were you? You're like 245 pounds, 6'4" as a walk on.
I got to almost 250 pounds. I think I walked on at about 220 pounds and I just ate and lifted weights and ran. Those were the days.
And you could catch a ball. Are you still, you're very athletic.
I was good at catching the ball, but nothing compared to the starters. I was,
really?
That was a dream. They were so much better than me. Mark Bruner and Ernie Conwell. They went to the NFL and stayed many years and played in numerous Super Bowls.
Did they ever invite you to come to a game?
Absolutely not. No. I've kept in minor contact but it wasn't a thing where we like remained
right.
close friends. Those guys, Ernie Conwell at the age of 21 was benching 520 pounds.
Oh my God.
And he was cleaning and jerking a 365.
It didn't sound right. It just doesn't sound right. He's cleaning and jerking.
He had 365 pounds of pressure
just
on it.
Jerking and cleaning.
He also could run the 40-yard dash in 4.5 seconds.
God.
And that is cruising at 300. He was almost 300 pounds.
Jesus. Hey, do you, this is back to the community days. You did that 6 years?
We did it for 6 years. We were canceled twice, but yes, we did it for 6 years
because the fans brought it back in a way. They had, is that true or no?
Well, when we were canceled the first time, we went to Yahoo because Yahoo somehow did some analytics that the show was critically acclaimed and popular enough for them to try their streaming service, which they then blamed us and Paul Feig for shutting it down, which was unfair. But I like to tell people I shut down an entire streaming service. That seems like something pretty cool.
Yeah.
And
your IQ must be off the charts.
Let me tell you about it. My IQ was off the charts for when I did the movie. I'm trying to think of a Sharon Stone movie that when I did a sat. No. Oh, what was the one she did with Stallone?
The not the Goodfellas, but the Cantina. The
Cantina guys?
No, not the Cantina guys. What is it?
He was like a bomber. They were like setting up. No, that was Assassins with Antonio Banderas. That was shot in Seattle. I remember that.
Camelot. Now, what is it? It starts with a C, doesn't it?
This is where the producer.
Wait, is it not? Is it not Cliffhanger?
No, it's Sharon Stone and who? Stallone.
Stallone.
Oh no, I was wrong. I was way off.
They had that shower scene that everyone was like, "They have a shower scene."
How you doing? You know, you're crossing your legs right now.
What? I did.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
You crossed your legs. I think we should use that shot.
I didn't notice.
Did I do that? Well, was I wearing underwear?
Because as you know, during rehearsal, I do not wear underwear. But when I shoot, I wear underwear. That's the thing. That's my thing.
Oh, God.
And thank God I got rid of these benign growths. Oh, my gosh. Look at
these.
I
was going to jump on that, but you did. You did. Good grab. Good catch. You know, something you probably don't talk about.
The specialist.
I think it's are you sure it's not the cantina?
Are you sure it's not the Camelot?
The Cantina Guys Center, right?
Camelot's
there.
Cantina.
Camelot's Cantina. Camelot's Cantina Guys.
Jeez Louise.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Now, look, this is probably something you don't talk about. You probably are just like, I'm not going to talk about it. But maybe you do talk about it. But I should just say it.
Chevy Chase?
Yeah.
Yeah, I talk about it all the time.
You do. I never heard you talk about it. But, you know, he's someone I loved. I grew up with. I was like, this is my favorite. People used to see kind of look like him. If Chevy and Barbara Eden had a baby. And I was like, cool. I like him.
Yeah.
I met him once. He was cool. And then when I heard all this stuff, I kind of got like, oh, fuck, man. Was he just a bastard on set that he just hated? And like, there's a lot of thoughts that go through because you read all the stuff that people say and hear the media chatting about it. And then my theory was that in his world, he was like, I'm a movie star. I've been a movie star for a long time. And now I'm a guy who kind of comes up and says a funny line and does whatever. And this isn't good enough for me. And I don't like being here. But that's just my theory.
Mm.
But I don't know what happened. So anyway.
Well, I think there was probably exactly what you just said. he was someone that did not want to be there for the hours that we were keeping. And the hours were long. There was no doubt about that. And the hours were the hours because we were shooting a movie every week. It wasn't, right. It wasn't documentary style or anything like that, except for one episode. And so he didn't like that. And there was no doubt, and I think he would absolutely agree, he sometimes could be in not great moods. And so he would have to be kind of shot out. You know, we'd have to get him, we'd have to get him out for the day because he didn't want to be there that long. And so that was a big problem.
Was that incredibly frustrating as the lead on the show? Did you ever have a conversation with him? Did they ask you to talk to him?
Oh, I would tease. I would go, I'm literally missing my children growing up right now. But that's fine. And Yeah, I mean, he was so funny on the show. When you look at what was on camera, it's super funny. It's really good. But he was always, he definitely did not want to be there those hours. And I think there was some of he was a big, huge, obviously the biggest comedy star of the 80s. He was the highest paid, at least.
Sure.
But between Vacation and Fletch and, you know, the zillion other movies he did, Caddyshack and all that. I'm sure there was some of that, but I know he was being well compensated for it.
Right.
That said, you get someone like Alec Baldwin, who did 30 Rock, who was in a, you know, big, huge movie star for a long time and then, you know, reinvented himself through that show. But, you know, it was unfortunate. And then Chevy was, you know, then he left the show under quite crazy circumstances. Right. So it could be tough some days. Other days he was great.
Did it sever the relationship with the other actors? Is there anybody who has a relationship with him, who has checked in with him, who still sort of like, hey, you know, you didn't like being on the show, you retired, you're older, you whatever it is, or is it kind of severed?
I don't know. I called him a few years ago when I played him in a movie.
I was so jealous of that because I thought I should play him.
Oh,
I was so jealous of you. I really was like, oh my God, Joel's so lucky.
Well, I was the right height. So
yeah, technically, I'm not that tall. I'm only 6 feet. Thanks for bringing that up.
So
but yeah.
Well, your back, you would be much taller.
But Chevy had a bad back.
He did have a bad back.
There you go.
Yes.
Another reason why I thought I should play him.
Oh, interesting.
No, I'm kidding. So go ahead. You called him.
I called him to tell him that I was going to play him. You know, like there's this movie going to be made and I'm going to be in it. I'm going to be playing you. But he was happy that Doug Kenny was getting his finally his due, because Doug Kenny really is kind of like the Hamilton of 70s comedy as far as, you know, like with creating National Lampoon and then, of course, writing Animal House and making Caddyshack and then dying very young. I called him when the movie was made. I was like, the movie's coming out now. So,
and what did he answer the phone? He talked to you. He did.
I mean, I would text him to let him know I was going to call him. He seemed fine with it. And, you know, but we haven't spoken. I don't know if anybody in the cast has spoken to him in a few years.
Right.
I mean, it's been a while.
But initially,
I saw his wife, who is lovely, and
right.
But you know, it was definitely contentious. But there were, I mean, if you watch him on the show, he's super funny.
Super funny. I wrote a treatment for a Vacation sequel.
Oh,
because they were back when they were looking for one. They obviously made it, and they didn't choose us. But I remember I had him and Bev sort of attached. Bev was really on, and Chevy was on, and they liked it. They loved the idea. So my writing partner at the time, Chris McDonald, we pitched it to New Line and they said, great pitch. We love this pitch. And I thought, this is a great fucking idea. This is the last hurrah. Everybody goes on this trip together. And they were just like, yeah, we don't want Chevy and Bev to be as prominent in the show. It's too much of them. We want them, you know.
Wow.
And they're very little.
And what was your response to that?
Well, I guess this, I could switch up the pitch. You know, but that it was part of like they go on this one last family trip together and, you know, Chevy hands the keys off to
it. It sounds great.
It was great. And they just and you get the mother from the woman from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes.
She was still alive at the time.
Oh, the mom. Yes.
The mom and a couple of the other characters and kind of I miss like Christmas Vacation, the family all together. And that's what people could relate to. So I wanted one last hurrah. And it was, I really loved the pitch and we were sad because we worked really hard on it, but they went in a different direction. And that's just the price you pay.
Is there a world where you could make that movie with just people that are not associated at all? I know there's
sure, tough, but I guess you could.
Why not just do a great family vacation and make that movie?
Where the dad just says, hey,
yeah,
not Russ, but Roy. I'm handing the keys to you. This is our last trip. After this is our last trip. And then, or
why don't you play the dad? I'll play Randy Quaid.
Wait, why do I have to play the dad? You think I'm old enough to play
the star?
The dad? Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if people believe me as a dad yet. I don't know. Do I look like a dad yet?
No, like grandpa dad. Like
Ryan
you're right
just
there.
Nodded. Yeah, he just goes like this. Fuck yeah.
Well, you look like Ryan's dad. No offense.
Oh, God.
Yeah, why not just make that movie, right? Go ahead. I mean, I think right here, let's
pitch it out. Do you think people want to hear this?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
I don't think we should do it.
I tried. I don't know. I don't think these people work anymore. And I just got sold, but I wanted to remake the movie Motel Hell.
Oh my God. It's one of my favorites.
It's an amazing movie.
What a great concept.
It's such a great movie.
You guys, it's such an archaic, beautiful old school horror film. That was one of the first movies my mom rented and made me watch with her when I was 8.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm fucked up.
Yeah. We would sneak down into my friend Jason Cusack's basement, like for his second birthday, and like they had Showtime, and the mom would be like, "Do not watch Motel Hell. We know it's on." And I don't know why they just didn't disconnect it, but of course we were like, "She's gone. Motel Hell." And for those of you who have not heard of it or seen it, it is worth it. There's a few it's so fun. And so I was like, my friend Scott Derrickson and I, who did Doctor Strange, and he did Ghost Cops, as my friend calls Deliver Us from Evil. But we were like, we want to make it, and they're like, yeah, no.
We'll
get you money. They're like, this will get you money, and they're like, nah.
Are you a big horror fan?
I'm not like you. In that I have this. I really enjoy them.
Me too. Good ones. There's a lot of bad ones. There's many bad ones.
Yeah. But boy, the good ones are great.
Yeah, like It Follows was a great little horror movie.
Great idea. Yeah.
Well, I've written two, and we're just going out with them now because I'm a big fan. I just love horror. I complain a lot because, you know, explain Rotten Tomatoes to me, because I know it's supposed to be like, well, it's all these reviews that add up to get the mean of the average of score. And I go, I don't believe it. I don't believe that someone gave this an 87%. There's no fucking way. And it happens all the time. Does the studio hire?
Wait, like 87% is good.
Right. And the movie's not that good. So when I watch the movie and it's like, this is a 40 at best, and I'm maybe a 50, but 87%.
So can you name names on a movie that you're like, this is not an 87%? You don't have to. I don't want to put you on the spot. I want to be that guy.
No, I just watched a movie called, I hate to bomb movies.
No, maybe don't, but don't.
It's called something.
Okay. So that sounds good. And I love that movie.
Yeah.
And I gave it a 99. So I feel like that happens a lot where I was like, oh, that's not as good as that thing.
It just doesn't.
But it is interesting when the reviews are like 40% and then the people, the
audience.
Always
look at the audience.
Yeah,
look at the audience. If the audience are saying 3 out of 5 and the reviewers are saying 90%, listen to your fellow people.
That's why Roger Ebert was such a great reviewer, because he would be like, and you'd see him, he's like, okay, it's not the greatest movie, but boy, did I enjoy it.
Yeah.
He'd be like, there's some really great stuff and here's why it works so well, but it's not it's not going to change your life. It's not important, but it's sure as hell fun.
Have you ever had bad reviews? Like really bad?
I was nominated for a Razzie for The Happy Time Murders, and which I took as a compliment.
You should.
But that movie got universally destroyed. And I think it became one of those movies that people enjoyed destroying. So, you know, once that catches on, even though, you know, wasn't as there's movies I've been in that have bombed way bigger, but nobody, they weren't even a blip, and people were like, oh, well, it was just a thing. But they, I'm trying to think of like a movie where, when I got Community, the review said of the pilot said, this show is really great. It's got everything you need, but it's never going to work because of the lead. And that was just,
had shit like that. I had something where I won't name the movie because the other actor in the movie is a good friend of ours and would not like me mentioning this, but the review was the movie, like they hated the movie. They go, so-and-so is not funny. So-and-so will never be funny. And Michael Rosenbaum has never been funny. And I was just, what the fuck? And of course you start going, didn't you see that? But I wanted to call the reviewer.
That is not a review when you think about it.
I mean, God.
That is not a review of a movie. That is just insult, right?
The guy just wanted to kill us.
Hey, what do you think of that reviewer's? Do you guys like that critic? And they're like, you seen how he dresses? And be like, no, he dresses like an idiot. I was like, but what did he think of Event Horizon? Who cares?
Look at him.
His mustache is stupid. So when I see stuff like that, or when reviewers go like, well, here we go again with this thing where this guy does this thing. And I was like, wait, so you don't like the movie because the person in it did something you didn't like?
Right.
So what are we talking about?
Exactly. You don't like these people. For some reason, you have something against them, so you were never going to like this movie.
Yeah, it's like you can feel the glee when they get to take things apart. And I I hosted The Soup where I enjoyed making fun of Bachelor in Paradise because they were barefoot and having sex and they were high
and rippable
and they fell out of the bed and then their boob, whatever it was like that seemed. But when you go like that, then when you see these guys that you can see them enjoying it, then I'm like, oh, all right, well.
Well, you know what? Back to The Soup. You had to take over for John Henson.
No.
Well, he left.
He left, and then Aisha Tyler came in. And then it was, and then had been on for 10 years.
Oh, see, I always think of it as John Henson and then you. That's how I remember.
No, Aisha did it for 2 years. And at that point, it had already, talk shows were already waning at that point. So in 2004, it was not even called The Soup. It started out being called the What the Blank Awards, which was a very confusing title. And when the new boss came in, Ted Harbert, he was like, I don't understand what that, did someone forget it? It was supposed to be like the What the Hell Awards, the What the Fuck Awards, the What the Heck Awards. And so he was just like, don't we have that Talk Soup name? And then that became that.
And you're asked to do, how often do you turn shit down? Because honestly, and you could be humble, you're going to be humble about this, but I know that you probably get offers for tons of shit, especially to host everything because you're so likable, personable. People want to.
God bless you.
But right, so you get a lot of offers to do stuff.
Not as much as you'd think.
Well, I mean, you got the Joel McHale show with Joel McHale.
Not as much as I would like. Oh, yeah.
Sharks. You did The Soup. You got, you're kind of.
Crime Scene Kitchen.
Crime Scene Kitchen.
Now, everybody.
Crime Scene Kitchen on now.
Someone's bleeding out.
Frosting. It looks funny.
It's good.
It looks
times.
Just like you have a good time. You have a good rapport with the people and you're just like,
they're very intense bakers. And of course that's my opportunity
funny enough. We were talking about what people wear, the reviewer, but I remember in one clip you were looking at some guy and he's like, I'm going to keep harassing you about your turtleneck. And the woman goes, well, look at you're wearing. And she's like, yes, but I'm the host.
Right. Yes.
So it's very,
she was dressed like she was hunting foxes in 1850 and he was wearing a wool turtleneck. They're both brilliant bakers, but I was like, dude, and he could see the sweat around the seams. And I was like, enjoy baking in here in your ski chalet with all the windows open, but it's not.
Anyway. Oh, God. Happily.
Happily. Yes.
Happily. I have to see that.
Good times.
Ben David Grabinski.
Yes.
Of course. I know him. Ben David. I've known him for years and I'm going to watch this film.
Carrie Bechet is one of the best actors I've ever worked with. And I don't know why she's not a gigantic movie star. And then the rest of the cast is just,
was it a fun time?
Great fun time.
Was it hard?
It wasn't that, Ben ran a really tight set and the director of photography is a genius. And so everything was pretty well put together. It's a very tiny little movie, but it was really fun to make. And the only real hiccup was one of the sewage pipes burst in this super modern mansion we were shooting in. And the sewage flowed out all over the carpets.
And did it smell like shit for the remainder of the shoot?
It was pretty rough. It was when you're doing a party scene and you're trying to eat and then all you're doing is smelling waste.
Do you think Chevy would have wanted to go home?
Well, I don't know.
You all wanted to go home when that
there was
that shit
a lot of like, can we keep the windows open during? But then they dried it out, and I don't know how we were walking around barefoot because it was like a pool scene. So,
oh God,
yeah, I was amputated, so it was bad.
I got to see this
flesh aiding.
I want to see you amputated.
Let me know what you think.
Yeah, I love horror. I watch it all the time, and I'm always.
It's not horror, happily.
It's not.
No.
You just said you got your leg cut off.
No, from walking in the
sewage.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a joke.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I didn't get it. I mean, I wasn't smart enough to receive.
Or I didn't deliver it.
I think you
well.
Delivered it perfectly because I think you laughed.
Yeah. No, I got it.
Thank you.
Jesus.
Thank you, Josh Hartnett's brother.
It kind of does, right? That's a comment. You're a handsome guy.
I'll take that.
I got to ask this. Your body's so tight. We've talked about this. Your body.
I
know. You look really great.
It's really just desperation. But midlife crisis.
But you fast, right? Effect. You do this fasting thing. I hear.
I used to do a lot of
that. Did that work?
Worked for a long time, and then it kind of started not working because I think I put my metabolism into a state where every time I would get eat a lot, then it would be like, thank you for this. We're going to keep this as long as we possibly can. And
so you get bloated and things.
I just noticed that when I would have a meal, I was like, oh, I'm not kind of maintaining the weight I want to be at. This is getting very specific, guys. But now I find that small meals and just really portion control more than anything is.
That's my problem. I try to eat big meals like three times a day, but you should have smaller meals, like 4 or 5 small meals a day.
I really only like dinner is the real meal that I have. So this morning I've had a handful of nuts.
And that's some, it.
Yeah.
Are you dying right now?
Some blueberries. No, I'm so used to that. I mean, I'm sure I've had like 5 cups of coffee.
Nice mug, by the way.
To which are you referring?
It's an Inside of You mug. You can get on the Inside of You online store.
What do they retail for?
I don't know, like $17.
But
it's
right
a good
now,
mug.
But right now, on sale for $11.99. And just swipe up. Swipe up.
Don't swipe. Don't swipe. I'm not swipe in control up. Of that. And then you'll...
You know what else I feel good about is
$11.99 for just this moment.
Flavored water. Hint is Hint.
You know what? They don't give me any money, but I love them and they send me tons of water and I really like their water. Hint's really good. Delicious.
Can I say this is a pretty important statement.
Sure, I'll cut it.
That when people, that when people like you like Hint, right?
Yeah, I do.
It's
like
great.
Hint.
It's very tasty.
Yeah.
And then people are like, he's getting paid for that. But they really just send you a few boxes.
I don't get paid at all. They just send me when I need
and
water.
That I feel like that happens a lot with celebrities people that have a presence on social media. And they're like, he's getting paid for that. And then sometimes they do. But right. And that's pretty obvious. But a lot of times it's like, nah, I just really like a Yeti mug. I went out and spent $30 on it.
Wait a minute. So you really, are you saying you believe that they just like the product? What are you saying here? Because it sounds like you're saying, yeah, this Yeti mug that I'm using, I am getting paid for this.
Sometimes like I'll post a photo or something like, oh yeah, okay, I see. Nice Land's End sweater. Well.
I get a couple $1,000 for that.
Yeah, that was that sweater. Definitely.
The Land's End.
But thank you for the hint. I will definitely drink it soon.
You know, briefly, I just want to talk about, like, you found out you were dyslexic after your kids.
Yeah, after my first kid was diagnosed, which it was one of those things I probably should have noticed earlier. But
how do you notice it? What are this? Because now that you know, you could probably tell the world the symptoms so that they can kind of look out for that, maybe.
If you read very slowly and you can't spell shit, that's a pretty good sign.
Well, shit.
And when you look at words, you're like, okay. And people like, they're backwards. I was like, they don't really look like anything. And
when you say things backwards,
you
is
don't.
That
no, people are like, oh, they're backwards. I was like, it's not backwards.
Okay.
It's just kind of like
jumbled.
You know. Yeah, it's just doesn't look right. And so you read very slowly. And I think at that time when I was a kid, you did not tell people. You'd like, I don't think I'm so you. I like literally I was tested and they're like, he seems smart, but he's what we call a slow starter. And then I told the doctor that who diagnosed my first kid. And she was like, put her head down. They're like, they told a second grader he was slow. I was like, yeah, that was not probably.
Yeah.
And the you don't think about that stuff. But like when spelling bee days would come up, people would start doing like slow claps for me before I even started talking. Cause they were like, spell thorough. And they're like, here we go. And so I never knew that. To this day,
that's
like,
a tough word. Thorough.
Yeah. I always thought if you were trying to learn English and they were like, here's thorough, though, and through. They mean all different things.
Yes.
So good luck.
I would say, like, you know how you get to ask somebody, like, is that a noun? Is that a, I'd say thorough. Is that a person, an artist? Henry.
George.
Henry, I mean, David.
Yeah, Thoreau. Thoreau?
Thoreau.
George, yeah. Thorough, good.
Thorough, good.
Sad to the bone. Yeah. But dyslexic people, they never lose it, but you definitely find ways to accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
So believe me, when the soup started and they were like, okay, here's a half an hour of jokes on a teleprompter, I'd be like, well,
how often do you mess up?
So it took me 4 hours to get through 22 minutes of jokes if you take a cut out the commercials.
I bet it would take me that long too.
Forever. So but by the time once I got into it and the anxiety went down, which I had a ton of, because I'm like, oh, but don't fuck this up. And I would like show the clip and I'd be like, I'm doing well. And then, and so Then we started doing the show live. So I began like, hey guys, I've got dyslexia. I don't know how this is going to go. So I started using it as a promo.
Right, right.
And only one time did they have to, I screwed up and I was like, ah, fuck. And then all their eyes were bright. I was like, and they hit the button and I was like, ooh, I said fuck. And they're like, hit the button again. So
double fuck.
It became sort of fun. And right. I was like, I'm just going to use, this is the way I'm going to use it. And I always looked at David Letterman as the king of, if he didn't like a punchline, he would point it out and say it for the rest of the show. And so then when that started, I was like, oh, just do that. Because then if I screwed something up, I'm like, remember that punchline I missed? Oof, that would have been great. People would have loved that. That would have been a great moment for people at home to enjoy. Anyway, so that's how I adapted with it. And so to this day, I don't read books. I just listen. I mean, thank God for Audible. It has changed my life because it's all I do now. I don't even listen to music as much as I used to because
you just lie there and just listen to a great story.
When I work out, that's when I do it.
Really? Listen when you work out?
I listen to books when I work out.
Don't you need something? Well, maybe you should listen to a reading of like The Fugitive so you have the energy. I mean,
well, I do listen to a lot of Jack Reacher when I work
Jack
out.
Reacher.
Because those books are written so well and they move along so well that.
Right.
But sometimes I decided I'd go back and try to listen to a lot of the classics. So once you get pretty knee deep in Dostoevsky and you're trying to keep track of all the names and then all their nicknames, I literally would write it. I was like, I had to keep a list. I was okay, this is Misha who has a nickname.
We do a segment in the beginning, which we just started, we didn't do this yet, but just it's quick. It's a mental health check-in. It's called just how you doing.
How you doing?
And really, just it's just how your mental health is now. How you're feeling. You know, whether you have anxiety, what you do for your anxiety, what you're feeling now, right now, or this last week, or like lately.
Pretty good. I like to think that I'm like, hey, things are going fine and well. What problems do you have? What do you have to complain about? Mm. But then I, you know, when I wake up at 4 a.m. in a panic, I'm like,
what are you panicking about?
What's going to happen? What's going to happen with the rest of everything? And a lot of that, a lot of like, am I ever going to work again? Are my kids going to be okay? How's my wife doing? A lot of that. And, so that's not fun.
Well, what helps that?
You like 4 Ambien and a shot of vodka.
Then
I can sleep for a perfect hour.
You liar.
No. What helps? Talking to my wife. I should probably go to therapy,
right?
Which I don't, but I should. And I just like, it's funny. I just read a Ryan Reynolds quote of all. And he was just like, he's the same. He basically said exactly what he was like. I never turn anything down because I live in a constant state of anxiousness. And I was like, yeah, that's me. That's perfectly described. And I'm on a gerbil's wheel all the time. Because when I first got here, when it started, I mean, because I was so, you know, that moment where you're like, I just want to work. I just want to work. And then there's that flip where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm working. It's happening. And it doesn't necessarily scratch the itch, but that attitude of hustler, like being an actor, you're always hustling. That's the nature. And I think sometimes that's very healthy. And then other times it just keeps the pistons going the whole time. And then when you go on vacation, you have a panic attack. So that train I have not really learned how to get off of. I think you're like me in that I truly love working. I love it. I cannot believe people pay me to do what I love, but that is separate than the, than just like keep the plate spinning all the time.
Right. I hear that. For me, the more I work, I just envelop myself in things so much that I'm so hard on myself that I extra hard and I spend way more time learning lines, getting in the care, whatever it is, that it's kind of hell. It's not really fun. Hmm. It's not fun.
When you're there doing it, is it fun?
When I'm there doing it, it is fun because I like people and I like crews and I like that kind of thing. And if it's a fun role, it's always good. You know, some people go, I don't care. I just like to work. I'll do anything. And I go, I can't do that. I have to really just love what I'm. It's not just about love what you're doing, but love what you're saying. Love the people you're working with. It's a combination of a lot of things.
I agree.
So, but that's a lucky thing. It's a lucky enough to be on something that's good. That's extra lucky.
Yeah.
It's rare.
I think people. Yes. It's so rare when you're on something really good and rare when that good lines up with a bunch of people that want to see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very. Oh, yeah. And I was like, oh, that's what Seinfeld said. They're like, are you going to do another version of Seinfeld? And he said something like, it's really hard to hit 4 grand slams in Yankee Stadium again. And I was like, damn, that's a good analogy perfectly he threaded all the needles with what an extraordinary show. Extraordinary characters. And it was just universally loved.
I think it's the same thing on a different level. I mean, obviously the community or Smallville weren't as big as Seinfeld. Nothing is. But on the same level, what has he done since Community? If that was that, or what has he done since Smallville? I'm like, I can only really go down for the most part. I can only go downhill. Like,
I've tried about a million things.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's for me to get better than that. That was a huge show. Community was a huge show. So
funny because the whole time we were like, I think that's it.
Yeah, this is it.
Told numerous times at the end of seasons, they were like, hey, can this last episode be the season and series finale? Like, that's how, like, just the confident, the network just going like, well, we'll see. We might have something better. And
unbelievable.
Like, oh, yeah.
You all loved it. You wanted to be there.
We all knew the hours were bananas, but we all knew because we would do these table reads, which were so great. And then I would stand up and point at the Sony and the NBC executives. And I was like, do not change a word. And then I'd walk out and they were like, hey, you're like a bully. I'm like, yeah, I'm this. Fuck yes. Don't do it. Don't change anything. And
And they didn't. You seem like a guy that doesn't really. When you get mad, everybody goes, ooh, there's a reason. Because you don't seem like you get mad very often. If you lose your shit, Joel's upset. Something's real.
I am amazing at blowing up at inanimate objects.
Like that right there, that mask of.
If the mask was not staying up on that thing, I might destroy it.
You might kill Jason Voorhees.
Yesterday, again. I was logging into a computer I hadn't logged into. And you had to get the code from your, like, log into Gmail. And it said, and I accidentally hit reset password. And the Zoom call had started 4 minutes earlier. And I screamed, God damn it. And my wife came in and she's like, where's the emergency? And then, you know, when I explain it, I sound like an insane person. We're like, well, I accidentally pushed reset password. That merited me screaming. And
she just rolled her eyes.
Yeah. She's like, okay. Well, I'm going to go, deal with the education of our children. So
I'm going to calm the kids down.
Yeah. I'm going to go take care of real life problems. So,
hey, really quick. And we're done. There's some shit talking rapid fire questions from fans, from Patreon. I love my patrons. Go to patreon.com/insideofyou. But do you think there'll ever be a community reunion? Because they're doing all these other shows.
If you had asked me that a year ago, I would have said yes, but no. And I would have said, like, who knows? But we did a table read a year ago, and it was so much fun. And Donald came, so it was great. And then Pedro Pascal played this part in a table read. And I burst out crying with my wife afterwards because I was just like, I missed all those people much. I mean, just crying. And I couldn't keep it in. And so I think now more than ever, it's possible. But as you know, you need like millions of dollars. You need schedules to line up. You need scripts.
You need the head of the whole operation to go, I just love that show.
Yeah,
maybe. Right.
Yeah. You need if you're building an aircraft carrier, there's a lot of parts that go in and you need an admiral to go like, let's make it. And, so I would say it's more likely now than it was.
It's more likely.
Well, than it was a year ago.
Okay. But, all right.
But again, if someone out there has $40 million,
guys, come on, you want to see a community reunion, 40 mil.
That's
and
it.
And the mugs I'm are sure $17.99 for the mug.
There's a couple of hedge fund guys listening, right? Sure, they must be.
All right, this is Rapid Fire with Joel McHale. It's called Shit Talking with Joel McHale. Fast answers. Here we go. Rapid. Nico P, I had the pleasure of watching you perform at Theater Sports here in Seattle on many a weekend. How did that help you in your career? Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Go Hawks. Go Hawks. I think the sheer number of hours of stage time really helped. Being on stage four nights a week for years and just being out there really helped me a lot. And, of course, being there with a group of incredible improvisers.
Michelle K, best prank that happened on the community set?
Donald would try to pull my pants down all the time.
Could do it now, though, could he? Because that shit would have, you know, that would fly years ago. I would try that stuff.
With my
guy friends.
I did give him permission.
Oh, okay. You can right do it. Before. Just, I don't want to know about it. Just surprise me.
No, there was never like, it wasn't like a prank where like we all spent, you know, like, I was like, I did it. I stuffed their trailer full of cotton balls. That never, there was nothing
right,
like
right,
that.
Right. But the pants, that's funny. I like the pants.
It is, yes.
Really. Sarah F., what was the funniest thing you saw while hosting Crime Scene Kitchen?
I think the disastrous desserts, there's a couple that are coming up that are pretty amazing.
Did it just make you genuinely laugh?
Oh, laugh so hard. We ate raw eggs on this last one where I'm like, hey, let's hope we're not sick.
Steph A, are you and Ken planning on returning to the Darkest Timeline podcast?
Ken is the busiest person on the planet. And so we would love to, but soon as August hit, he started the Masked Singer and then I did Card Sharks. And then, so we just kept missing. So I would love to, but we'll see.
I love that he crashed your interview with Kelly Clarkson. That was cute. That was fun.
So great. Even though I hate his guts, he's one of my best friends and I love him so much.
Diane R, did you have a nickname in elementary school?
In high school, I was just called the asshole. No.
Ass Joel.
Yeah. No. My friend Adam Satesmic would call me McMailman, but that was about it. No,
really?
I didn't
McHale.
Have one. Because
I would have called you McHale, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You never heard that one? That's too easy. McHale,
It was because Carl Malone, who was on the Utah Jazz, was called McMailman, and I played basketball, so they called me McMailman, even though I rode the bench most of the time.
Seems like you rode the bench in college and football.
I was on a very good basketball team.
Wow.
I got in sometimes.
You scored.
Our guard was, he was like 6'7".
Lisa H, final question. What was it like playing Starman on Stargirl? And did you enjoy putting on the tights?
Absolutely. When the two people would come into my trailer to help me get into that thing, I felt like a superhero. I'd be like, there's a crime happening. Let me get two people to help me get into this thing for 40 minutes. It's so much fun on Stargirl. And a lot of my scenes are with Luke Wilson.
Oh,
who
man.
He is responsible for some of the biggest laughs I've ever had in movies. That scene in Royal Tenenbaums when he's playing tennis, I couldn't control myself. I had to I couldn't breathe. It was so funny. So the fact that I've gotten to know him a little bit, I'm just like, damn, this is great. And Breck Bassinger, who plays Stargirl, is tremendous, and she's like 22, and you know, she's in every scene and she's great. And
can then you do an Owen Wilson impression?
Yeah. Let's see. He told us I was like, I'm just gonna get some groceries.
That you had the word groceries. I don't know. It's like, it's like, does this thing where he just like chooses.
That's
everything.
Owen. I'm doing Luke.
Oh,
I did Luke.
You're doing Luke.
Yeah.
Also, if Owen and Luke are talking, I was like, so, hey, Luke, you want to go over and have some like breakfast or something?
Yeah, I'm going to get some groceries.
Well, you know, they have eggs here at the breakfast place.
Yeah, I don't want those.
All right.
I don't know.
Right.
This was terrible.
No one's going to get it.
I mean, Idiocracy is going to be one of the most underappreciated movies.
It really is. I remember I auditioned that and I was the biggest fail of an audition I've ever had. And Dax got it.
Well, and think about to this day when Dax was like, oh, Monty. I mean, it's incredible what he did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember I went in there for Mike Judge, and I just pictured Mike Judge as wanting something so off the wall that I remember I brought a statue of my dog that was about this big. And I remember I just put it on his desk, and I had this big dip in. And I was just like, you want me to do that right now? You want me? And I thought I was like, it was so out there.
That reminded me of Stephen Root in Office Space.
Really?
Who, by the way, isn't happily, and he's a fucking genius.
He is a genius. But I remember I called my manager at the time, and I go, I killed it, right? I killed it. He goes, Mike was kind of scared. I go, what? He goes, yeah, he just said, didn't know what you were doing. He just was really, he said it was one of the most uncomfortable things he's ever witnessed.
And you were like, I got it.
No. And I was like, so then I'm in. Yeah, no, but you know, sometimes you go for it and you just fail.
See, and then you tell that story and I'm like, someday I'll audition for Mike Judge. See, that's how
just
I
don't
look
go
at
too
it.
Big. You want subtle.
My log money. I have I tweet that out once, just every once in a while. I'm like, I cannot believe how funny.
That's amazing.
Like, we need to get some money, and he's like, "Oh, log money," and I'm like, "Oh, so fucking funny."
Did you ever see it, Ryan?
Yeah, no, it's great.
Yeah, it is. It is underappreciated, that's for sure. My friend Sarah Rue's in that. Who else is in there? What's his name? Big muscular.
Horatio Sands is in there.
Terry Crews.
Terry Crews
plays
Cruz.
The president.
Yep.
And of course, Maya Rudolph is who should be given like 12 Oscars now for what she does.
Yeah, she's pretty genius. Well, look, this has been, it feels like, I'm glad you were comfortable, first of all. I don't think you'd be comfortable sitting. You would have been more uncomfortable.
I have to put my legs up. Like, even when I sit in movie theaters, I'm like, we're going to put my legs. So those fullback seats now,
They're great. So this has been comfortable for you.
This is great.
This has been great. It felt like just a conversation with a buddy. It really did.
You get ones where you're just like, and now another question, and they answered it, and now I have to ask them another question. We're still trying to keep this ball in the air.
It's happened. We've had some that are just a little all over the place. I mean, most of them are great. Most of their guests are great, but there's been a couple that I just have to, you know, you ask a question, and they're like, yeah, that was fun. You're like, holy shit. But what did you, and I'm going down, like I'm diagramming a sentence, like, you know, and I'm just going
then
down.
You're like, that's when you are dancing.
And then I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, well, thank you. That was great. Like, that was a 20-minute interview. Yeah. And then people are pissed because there's 5 ads in 20 minutes.
It was like, yeah, you didn't say anything.
Yeah. What was
that's
I going
to
do?
So many baseball players, they're like, hey, you had a good game by the 7th inning. You did that and just go 6. How did you think it went? It was good. Good. I'm like, what the? How do you feel like you played tonight? It's every game is, you know, important.
Do they even interview these people?
I wish
every
they would just,
athlete after the game, with an exception of a few, it's the same answer. What were you thinking at that moment? Oh, that I just had to hit the ball.
Right.
Okay, and then you did, but when you hit it, were you surprised that you hit it? Maybe it's the interviewer. Maybe they're not getting deep enough.
I don't know.
That.
Maybe if the guy was just like, I hate that guy. When he throws the ball, I hate him, and I just want to hit him with a bat, so I just hit his ball as hard as I could.
All right, I love you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's so good
this is great.
Spend time with you.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Your house is amazing, and I'm not kidding.
Thank you. I really enjoy it.
I've stolen 3 things.
Hope you enjoyed that one. I know I did. I know Ryan did.
I did.
You did.
I did.
You know, and when you have to edit these things, I think that you sometimes, if you really are excited about it, it's easy to edit when you're excited about a guest.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And when you're not enjoying the guest, it's probably not that easy.
That happens. Not often.
Because you have to edit it to make people enjoy it and be the best episode it could be and not be selfish. That's the wrong word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You can't be like, well, I don't really care about this one, so I'm gonna give it a half-ass job.
No, I give every edit the same care,
and it shows. If you guys want to join Patreon, the Patreon wonderful family, if you don't know what Patreon is, it's giving back to the podcast, giving a little extra something to the podcast. You join at patreon.com/insideofyou. I write you a message right after you join or soon after. And you get things like packages every couple months from me. You get notes from me. You get questions that I answer on video. There's YouTube lives. There's questions you get to ask the guests. There's a bunch of different tiers. But more importantly, everybody on there has become family. And a lot of friendships have spawned.
Well, now you said it in a creepy way.
Yeah, you spawned last episode.
Spawned.
So join Patreon. Patreon.com/insideofyou. Also, if you want to go to the Inside of You online store, a bunch of cool stuff there. Check it out. New mugs, journals, Lex Luthor stuff, Smallville stuff. I think you'll get a kick out of it. Also, Sunspin, my band, is playing July 31st. 2 shows, 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Get tickets. You can get tickets at sunspin.com. It's going to be great. We haven't played in a month or 2 months, so this is going to be a big concert. So I hope you enjoy it. You come do it. You can get tickets at sunspin.com or stageit.com and type in Sunspin and get tickets and join the family, because there's going to be a lot of fun people there.
I think some people might crash the party. Maybe you'll crash the party, Ryan.
I always crash parties.
Also letting you guys know that I'm going to be at some conventions coming up. I mean, like soon. Get your tickets. I'll be in Houston, folks. And that's coming up. That's July 17th and 18th. I'll be in Houston. Just go to comicpalooza.com. Get your tickets. I'll also be in September 4th, Dragon Con. Lexington on September 9th. And West Virginia Mountaineer Comic Con, September 24th. I know a lot of you are coming. I can't wait to see you at each and every one of them. You might be the only ones, my lovely patrons, coming to see me, supporting me. Yeah, well, I appreciate you guys listening, and I'm going to keep doing this as long as you keep listening. Spread the word, write a review. You know who you are. You mean a lot to me. Let's do the top patron shout-outs. Nancy.
D.
Mary.
B.
Leah.
S.
Trisha.
F.
Sarah.
V.
Little.
Lisa.
Yukiko. Sorry, said that one. Jill.
E.
Brian.
H.
Lauren.
G.
Nico.
P.
Robin.
S.
Jerry.
W.
Robert.
B.
Nice. Jason.
W.
Apothean. Sorry. Said it again. Kristen.
K.
Amelia.
O.
Allison.
L.
Lucas.
M.
Raj.
C.
Joshua.
D.
Emily.
S.
Wow. CJ.
P.
Wow. Samantha.
M.
Jennifer.
N.
Stacy.
L.
Carly.
L.
H.
Fuck.
Then there's a Carly.
Oh, then there's a Carly L.
And a Carly S.
L. Carly S.
Then Jen S. Jamal F. Stop me if you know any. Janelle.
B.
Tabitha.
272. Not because of the 273.
Yes. Kimberly.
E.
Mike.
Mike. Good old Mike. Mike. E.
Correct. Mikey. Mike E. You'll remember that now. Eldon Supremo. 99.
More.
Ra.
Mira.
Santiago.
M.
Yes. Sarah.
V.
Sarah F. Chad.
Sarah, I literally did her. Oh, Chad.
This is where it gets dicey.
Yeah.
Chad W. Leanne.
Leanne P.
Ray.
H.
A.
Or A first.
Maya.
P.
Maddie.
S.
Kendrick.
F.
Ashley.
Don't know.
E. Shannon.
D.
Matt.
X.
W. Nobody has starts with an X.
I was hoping.
Belinda N. Kevin V. James R. Chris H. Dave H. Samantha S. Spider-Man.
Chase.
Sheila.
G.
Brad.
Oh, D.
Ray.
H.
Tabitha.
T.
Tom.
N.
Suzanne.
B.
Liliana.
A.
Michelle.
K.
Marcus.
W.
Hannah.
You're
astonishing. Hannah B.
Yeah.
Michael.
Myers.
Michael S. Talia M. Andrew T. Betsy D. Claire M. Liz J. Laura L. Chat L. Rochelle. Nathan E. Taylor K. Marion. Marion. Meg K. Janelle P. Trev L. Dan N. Diane R. O.
Ajetta.
Ajetta. Ajetta. Lorraine G. Veronica K. Big Stevie.
W.
Kendall.
Don't know.
T. Carol D. Sandy M. No, Sandy B. Sorry, Sandy. Sandy. Angel M, Eric C, Rhiannon C, Stephen M, Corey K, Super Sam.
Sure.
Emily C, Sherry S, Coleman G, David C, Michelle A, Riley J, Matt W, Liz L, Jeremy C, Andy T, Cody R, Chris E, Sebastian K, Gavinator, Ann H, Elliot M, John B, and Brandy D. Those are the wonderful patrons who give extra every month, who I adore. Thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for continuing to give. And, you know, it's hard because every 4 months I have to send a box and I don't always have new merch. And but I think they understand. I get that, like, they know that I write a note and they know that I'm giving stuff and that I try. You know, I could be thoughtful every once in a while.
Speaking of merch, what about that one? They have that one?
Oh, yeah. This is the new blue.
The blue white and white one.
Blue inside of your mug. And it's available. And also a black and silver one, too. I burned myself in the black and silver one. I put it in the microwave and I didn't know that it was like just metal there. And I touched it and it literally burned my hand yesterday.
Oh.
So just don't put it in the microwave if it's metal. It's the first thing you learn in home ec.
God.
Thank you guys for all the support. Don't forget all the cons I'm coming to. You can rewind the Patreon, as we talked about, sunspin.com if you want to get a Zoom from me. And you want to get tickets to the show on July 31st, 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. It's going to be a wonderful stage since we haven't done it in 2 months. And thanks for all the support. A lot of good news coming up. And I don't know what I can announce, really. So that's the thing. There's good stuff going on, but I can't really announce things. I'm doing a lot of writing. doing a lot of writing and creating. And who knows, maybe Ryan will be involved in something I do, or I'll be involved in something he does.
Who knows?
You can do it this, or you can do it that.
You can deal with this.
Remember that song?
Yeah.
Who sang that?
Black Sheep.
Who's the black sheep? What's the black sheep? That was a good song. All right, from Michael Rosenbaum here in the Hollywood Hills.
And from Ryan Tejas, also in the Hollywood Hills at this moment.
We love you guys. Thanks for listening. Once again, I hope you're having a fantastic week, and be good to yourselves. Most importantly, thanks for allowing me to be inside each and every one of you. And thanks for coming back and listening each and every week. Thank you so much. All right.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.